everybody. Welcome to today's episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast presented by Overdrive. This is Adam. I'm not joined by Jill because her week is chaos, but I am joined by the three people that frequently come on when she cannot. It's Emma, Kristen, and Maria. Hello, ladies.
Hi.
All in unison. Hilariously, two of the three of them are using the recording studio that we have for the podcast that neither Jill nor I ever use. So at least someone's using it. So how's Happy everyone? How's everyone doing? I'm going to do the thing where I don't ask you one at a time. I'm just going to let everyone talk over each other. So how's everyone doing?
Great.
Good. No good.
You guys did it. Wonderful. We're going to do what we always do when the three of you are on collectively. We're just going to do a little round table, a grab bag of book recommendations, as I want to call it. So we're just going to go around the proverbial table, the virtual table, doing book recommendations of things we've been reading, are reading, have liked lately, blah, 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 all that good stuff. If you somehow don't get a good recommendation out of this list, you can always email us at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com, like a few people did this week and got some recommendations. Or you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, or TikTok at ProBookNerds. All three of you open your mouth. It's Jill's doing all the TikToks. I'm doing all the Instagram reels. We've been having way too much fun lately. We've actually lost some followers on Instagram because we won't stop doing reels. And honestly, I don't care. This is for me, not them.
That's amazing. I didn't know you guys were on TikTok. All right, I'll have to follow you.
Jill's very good at it. Yeah, she's kicking butt at it. It's very funny. I enjoy it. And as always, all the books will be in the show notes, so no worries. Writing them down. I'm gonna go below me in a circle. So I'm gonna start with Maria. What is your
right
first book
you'd like to talk about? I also just wanted to say, I just wanted to like do a little like millennial like flashback from when you were going to the mall in the 90s for grab bags. Do you guys remember the Claire's grab bag? At like Claire's jewelry, you could literally pay like $2.99 and just get like a paper bag of like whatever jewelry they felt like giving you that was like crappy jewelry, and it was just like the best grab bag ever. Anyway, so I hope someone else remembers the Claire's grab bag.
There's a bar in Lakewood that does that. They do a brown bag beer and a shot for $5.
I love that. I'm into it. I'm always into a grab bag. So yeah. Anyway. Okay, so I will tell you what I'm currently reading because I'm really excited about it. It's She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan, and it comes out next Tuesday.
I'm so excited for this. I can't wait to hear what you think of it so far, Maria.
I'm enjoying it so far. If I do all my like ebooks by percentages, so I'm 16% done. So I'm not like super far in, but it's an alternative history with like some fantastical elements, but basically it's about kind of like an alternative history of like the Mongolian rule era of China, like 1300s. And there's a boy and a girl in like a village that's kind of like stricken by hunger and famine. And the girl and her brother get like their fate told to them. And the boy has a fate of greatness and the girl has a fate of nothingness. Then their father dies. And the brother ends up succumbing to grief and also dies. And this girl's like, what? She like almost becomes angry. She's like, what the heck? He was supposed to be like this great, you know, we had some great future ahead of him or whatever. And now he's dead. And so she realizes the only way to kind of just like exist in life and escape her fate of nothingness is to pretend that she is her brother. And so she goes to seek refuge in a monastery. As him, and she's still doing that right now in the book. But basically, just in order to escape her own basically fated death, she is using her brother's identity and just like her sheer will to survive. And she's kind of like at this point starting to do some like questionable things to make sure she does not get discovered. So it's really great so far. I'm enjoying the writing as well, and the descriptions of like the other monks and, you know, what kind of goes on day to day. So I'm excited for more of this, but I always love a fantasy heroine who is like from like that, you know, kind of socioeconomic like status, and then is, you know, with her grit and everything kind of rises to, maybe morally questionably rises to, you know, power and things like that. Kind of reminds me of Rin from the Poppy War series. Mm-hmm. So let me, I'm always down for that. So yeah. I've been enjoying it.
I think we talked about the Poppy War last time you were on.
Yeah, we did.
We gushed about it. This one is high up on my list as well. Kristen, what is your first one?
Okay, so I'm also going to talk about what I'm currently reading, which I just want everyone to read. So I'm really enjoying it. It is The Death of Jane Lawrence by Caitlin Starling. And in order to grab all of you, I'm going to tell you that if you like Crimson Peak, Mexican Gothic, and Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier, this book should be on your reading list. I read the description of this book and was immediately like, yep, have to read it. And it was the next thing on my to-be-read pile. So this takes place in a secondary world. So basically it's like Great Britain adjacent, like right after probably World War I, I'm thinking. And I will let you know, this book doesn't come out until October 5th. So I'm sorry to be talking about it early and Rude. You can't get it yet. I know. But our main character, Jane, she was orphaned at a young age and adopted by this other family. And now she realizes that the best path for her forward to remain independent is to like arrange her own marriage. And so she does that to this doctor. And the arrangement is basically that, you know, she'll help him out at his practice. And he's like, okay, this is fine, but just one thing, you know, you can never come visit me at my family home. And so it's like, well, what's going on at the family home? So of course there is this accident on their wedding night and she has to flee back to Lindridge Hall, which is his family house. And she discovers like, he's just not the person that she thought he was. His confidence is completely gone and he just seems like terrified. And so she slowly starts discovering what's happening at this hall. It is so good. And I'm about halfway through and I've been told, like reading up on some of this stuff and some of the reviews, that there's a big twist. And so now I'm like starting to guess at what this big twist is, because it's just amazing. It's a really good, I guess it's kind of fantastical. There are some magical elements within it, but there's also, I will put a warning out there for anyone who's kind of yucked out by body horror. They do some surgeries and they talk about blood and guts and all that fun stuff. So just beware that, you know, if you read this, you're going to get into a little bit of that, but it's amazing. I can't wait for it to come out and for more people to read it, because I am just loving it so far.
What was the name of that one more time?
That is The Death of Jane Lawrence.
Yeah, that was for me to add to my TBR, yep. Honestly.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
Yeah. I think it said Crimson Peak and I was like, I'm in. Yep.
Yeah, as soon as you said that, I was like, say more words like that. Emma, what is your first one?
To continue the trend of what we're currently reading, I can continue that with my two picks. I'm simultaneously reading the prequel novellas and the first book of a series, because why? So I'm reading The Assassin's Blade and Throne of Glass, which are the novellas and first book of the Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas, because we are still on the Sarah J. Maas train. and gentlemen, never getting off it. I did take a detour and I will talk about some of those books, but because we're talking about what we're currently reading, this was me circling back to her other series after just reading all of her other books before this. So it's interesting. I know there's been a lot of debate about what order to read this series in, if you should read the first book or you should read the novellas or you should read them like one or the other. So I'm just reading the first two at the same time, because that makes tons of sense. So this series follows, I'm going to see, and like Sarah J. Maas likes a unique name. So I apologize to anyone who is going to cringe at how I pronounce the main character's name. Selena Sardothian. She's an assassin. As you are when you're a teen, you know, you're a feared assassin in a fantasy world. So yeah, the novellas in the first book obviously introduce the reader to this young heroine who has a little bit of a notorious reputation and a little bit of mystique surrounding her, which is intriguing to me. I'm about halfway through each of these. And so far it's just been really interesting because we've obviously got backstory in the prequels. And then we have like current, I guess, or things that kick off the series in book one. I would not recommend this approach to people. Pick a book and read that first. But I actually started reading Throne of Glass and then heard that you need to read the prequels first and that's the official way that Sarah J. Maas recommends you read it. So I like sort of slowed my reading of the first book and hopped into the novella. So we're doing them simultaneously. But yeah, I'm enjoying it so far. It's really interesting to have a different sort of world building in this new series. I mean, though, even though this series is not new, but I would definitely recommend for people that like her other stuff. I can't tell if this was originally supposed to be written for teens or adults. It's kind of in between for me, but so far so good. There's like intrigue, fantasy. I think there'll be some romance. There's hints of it throughout. So all the things I look for in a book at this moment.
I need to get her on the podcast.
Yes, you really do.
I'm just thinking, like, not only because she's Sarah J. Maas, but it's like she's talked about like every other episode, but like I think her and Rainbow are like the last two female YA like juggernauts that we haven't had on, because we've had Holly Black, we've had Victoria Schwab, we've had Leigh Bardugo, we've had Cassandra Clare. Like, I just feel like,
yep, it's like time.
Round it out. Yeah.
It's time. And her next book in the Crescent City series comes out in January. So like, you know, in the lead up to that, come on the podcast.
Calling my shot. We'll have Sarah J. Maas on the January episode. You heard it here first.
It's going to happen.
Put it out, right? Isn't that the secret? You just put it out in the world and then make it happen?
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. My first one is The 100 Years of Lenny and Margot. And allow me to get in a soapbox for one moment for this. So this is, without exaggeration, perhaps the saddest book I've ever read. But I always see people say things like, if they hear a book is sad, like, well, I didn't want to read that because it was sad. It's the same thing I hear when people are like, I didn't want to read that book because it was super long. Prior to the Orange Tree is like 900 pages, one of the best books I've ever read. Nobody balked when the fifth, sixth, and seventh Harry Potter books were 12 billion pages. Everyone was excited about it. If you see a long book that sounds interesting, don't let that steer you away. If you see a book that sounds interesting that you find out is very sad, don't let that steer you away. I love books that move my emotions. I don't want to read a book where I feel nothing the entire time. So all of that said, Thank you. Stepping off my soapbox.
I don't know if you can hear it.
Thank you, ladies. Thank you. Hat tip. This is a book, and I was like ugly crying by the end of it, and I don't care. It tells the story of two people who are in a hospital ward. Basically, it is implied that they are never going to leave because they have terminal illnesses. One of them is 83 years old. That's Margot. The other one is 17 years old. That's Lenny. They collectively realize they have lived 100 years. And so what ends up happening is it's told mostly through Lenny's eyes, and then Margot telling stories through her life, is they create this art project where between the two of them, they're going to create 100 stories or drawings or paintings that depict all the years of their lives collectively. So the 100 years of these two wonderful people. And it's this very unlikely friendship. I love an unlikely friendship. And it's extremely nostalgic. I'm a very nostalgic person. It really reminds me of a book that I talk about all the time, which is Lillian Bock's Fish Takes a Walk. But it just, it goes through, admittedly, the heartbreaking life stories of both of these characters and how they ended up in the hospital ward and how Lenny, despite being a 17-year-old with terminal cancer, is like the most positive and like curious person there could possibly be. And it just like goes through all their stories of their respective lives. And it's interesting because they don't really ever talk about how sick Lenny is getting. It's just like she'll wake up one day and then there'll be people that were with her, and she has no concept of like, was she just taking a nap or was it a surgery or how long was she sick? And again, it's extremely sad. I just told you that there are two people who have terminal illnesses, so you can probably figure out how this book ends, but it's so worth it. It's like, it has stayed with me. I put it on my own Instagram. I put it on the podcast Instagram. It's like, I've had like 7 people now in my life that have read this already who are just like social media friends of mine. And they're like, oh my God, this is like, yes, it's probably the saddest book I've ever read, but it's also probably the best book I've read all year. It's so good. And I just don't let it scare you off just because it's a very sad book. You will very much be happy you read this. So, my next one will be very soapboxy. So Maria, what's your next book?
I have that on my list, The 100 Years of Lenny Margot. So.
Oh, so, so, so good.
Yeah. I just need to be like, since I know it's sad, I'm like, okay, I need to be like emotionally prepared.
That's fair.
Being in the right, I just need to be ready for
totally
it.
Totally fair.
Yeah.
I totally get that when someone's like, I'm not ready for a super sad book.
Right. But don't dismiss it. Right. Yeah, exactly. So my next one that I just finished is The Road Trip by Beth O'Leary. I am I wouldn't even say low key. I'm obsessed with Beth O'Leary. Like anything she writes now, I'm like immediately like must read now. So this came out in June 2021. So I was like must read now. but if you haven't read, her other two books are The Flat Share and The Switch. And they're just all really delightful. This one was definitely, I felt like a little bit different than the other two, but still very, very well written, very Beth O'Leary. And it's about a couple that four years ago, Dylan and Addie fell in love in a whirlwind summer romance, quick summer romance. 2 years ago, their relationship officially ended. So now it's 2 years later. And they're separately headed to a mutual friend's wedding, and they crash cars at the start of the journey there because they're both on the same like interstate, whatever. So along with Dylan's best friend and Addie's sister and a random guy on Facebook who needed a ride to the wedding, they squeeze into a Mini Cooper and they set off. And this wedding is in like rural Scotland, so they have like a lot of driving to do, right? And like cramped into this space, there are a lot of mishaps that happen. Some are really funny and some bring to, you know, a head these issues that Dylan and Addie are forced to confront and confront the choices that they made that tore them apart. And then kind of ask themselves, okay, was this the right decision? You know, was there something we could have done differently? That sort of thing, because they both still have feelings for each other. The chapters go back and forth between then, which is the progression and eventual downfall of Dylan and Addie's relationship, and now, which is the road trip, obviously, and they alternate the main character's point of view. And like, this sounds like a hilarious premise, but, and there are some like really laugh out loud funny moments. I like, when there's like really funny moments in the book, I will like tell my husband about them, even though he has like no clue what's going on in the book. So there was a couple of that where I was like, ha ha ha, Jesse, guess what? And he's like, I don't know what's happening, but you know, he just deals with it. But even though those were there, she also deals with a lot more serious topics like sexual assault, alcohol issues, anxiety, and she does it with really great sensitivity, but also a lot of realness. I thought it's just a really good portrayal about how dysfunctional relationships, like Dylan's relationship with his best friend, and also Dylan's relationship with his dad and kind of with himself can affect your other relationships, and how hard it can be to, you know, fix yourself and grow so that these relationships can also grow and last. So it had a really good dichotomy of like funny situations, like the whole random guy on Facebook who needed a ride. That is like a whole subset of the plot that is like bonkers. And I think it adds a lot of levity to, you know, these other topics, but I really enjoyed it. I read it in just a few days, and I highly recommend Beth O'Leary to like everybody.
Sounds really good. Kristen, what's your next one?
So speaking of favorite authors, I'm going to talk about Grady Hendrix because I adore Grady Hendrix. Have you guys had him on the podcast?
He actually was this Monday's Ed Jill interviewed him for, I can actually tell you about the story about the fact that Horror Store is like set basically in our office. She talked to him about that. Yeah. All right, go ahead.
Oh my gosh. I love Grady Hendrix. And this year I'm focusing my like personal and professional focus is on horror fiction. And so I decided to read Paperbacks from Hell. And it has been like my favorite read of the year. It is hilarious. It's basically a breakdown of all the old like 70s, 80s, 90s paperback horror. And it's phenomenal. So Grady Hendrix goes through and he breaks down each chapter. And hold on, I have the chapters here. There's When Animals Attack, Real Estate Nightmares, Splatterpunk, Serial Killers and Super Creeps, Hail Satan, Creepy Kids. It's just amazing. So each chapter goes into like different books that fit into these categories. And then also kind of talking about like, why was this a thing? And he's hilarious. So like, it starts off talking about this leprechaun horror book, which sounds great. And was basically about like a couple who goes to Ireland and turns out they get like kidnapped and put in a dungeon by leprechauns who are Nazis. So it's just like, these are the kind of paperback horror books that existed like within our lifetimes. And I loved this book so much. So from someone who works with books on a daily basis, but also absolutely adores reading and books, I would highly suggest this to anyone who also loves books, loves reading books about books, or anyone who's into horror, anyone who likes like fun, campy stuff. That is what this title is. And the physical or also the ebook version of it includes like all of the cover images or a lot of the cover images from the titles he talks about. And they're hilarious. So this has also now started a new obsession for me, which is collecting old horror paperback novels. So anytime I find them at a thrift store or a used bookstore, I'm like, yep, taking that one, taking that one. And they're ridiculous and so fun. So I love Grady Hendrix for introducing this into my life and just because he's a fantastic author. So I highly recommend this book and basically anything else by him.
Yeah, I second that. It's Grady Hendrix week on the podcast. So that's
perfect.
That Paperbacks from Hell is so fun.
Yes. Yeah.
Emma, what is your next one?
Okay. I have two more, but do you want the one that I liked or the one that I didn't like?
Let's do the one that you liked first.
Okay. So this is a little bit of a random choice for me because I don't ever read nonfiction, let alone like businessy self-help type of books. But in between my Sarah J. Maas readings, I decided to just totally switch things up and check out Power Moves by Lauren McGoodwin. She's the founder of the website Career Contessa, and it's sort of a career resource for women. And the website includes everything from like courses to interviews, articles, like tips, job searching skills, and a bunch of other really cool things. So she wrote this book that came out last year. So it's been on my to read pile for a while. And the book pretty much gives you an in-depth look at some of her tips for how to like unstick your career. And so if you kind of feel like you're in a rut or you want to change things, the book really goes into different ways that you can do that and sort of take control of your career. And I feel like I'm at an interesting point in my life where that was something that I was, you know, intrigued by. And just, I really found it helpful. It was a good, like quick read. Sometimes I feel like with business books or self-help books, you can kind of get bogged down in lots of details and they can feel like, no offense to them, a little bit of a slog in my opinion, where you're just like trying to get to the points of the book. But the chapters were like really concise. Each one has like a specific topic on how you can sort of change your career or make power moves, as she's dubbed them. And they include things like big and small. So obviously like a large power move is to quit your job. A smaller one is to like start incorporating certain practices into your day-to-day life, and make like a gratitude list of things you like about work. And so she kind of covers a bunch of different things that you can do, and just provide a really interesting way to think about your career. I think in, again, like in little ways and in big ways. So I really enjoyed it. I don't normally like, you know, career businessy books, but I thought it was a really quick, interesting read, especially for millennial women. I think it'd be a really good read, and for people that, I mean, I know all the studies about millennials are like not the nicest, but we all grew up with a lot of the same things that I do think are challenges now for us. And she just had some really good insight into things where like I absolutely would not have thought that you can actually have a little bit more control over your career than you might think. So yeah, that's been my pick. I really enjoyed it. It was certainly a change of pace from the Sarah J. Maas train. But it was, I thought it was really worthwhile to just kind of look at things from a different way.
Another one that kind of will make you feel like the row you make you feel better about like being a millennial or a geriatric millennial, whatever the hell our term is, like, is Anne Helen Peterson's Can't Even. Like, it talks about how the millennial generation, like how we all work relentlessly, and it's like we're constantly told like it's never good enough, even though we're like we have no work-life balance, you know. And it's very, very interesting. So that's another one of those. My next one is called Razorblade Tears by S.A. Cosby, which I think just came out July 6th.
Yeah.
Emma's also looking at a making a face.
Well, I like that cover, and it did just come out, so I was like, yeah, I know this one.
Oh, yeah.
It's so okay. So it's really, really good. It reminds me a lot of like a Michael Conley or a Harlan Coben book, where it's very high action, easy to reach out, like easy to get through. It almost feels like an episode of like Law and Order or NCIS. It's just like, it's just like, it's that's like the way I describe kind of those, like, I don't want to call them like dad thrillers, but they sort of are like dad thrillers. Like that's how,
yeah,
I,
yeah.
You know, and what this one, there's a little bit, there's definitely more to this than just that, but there's these two fathers who are trying to avenge the deaths of their sons who were married. And both of these fathers didn't really accept that their sons were gay. And so both of their sons were violently murdered, and they're trying to figure out why it happened. And as it just would happen, both of these fathers were previously like in jail and happened to be just like ultimate badasses. And like, one of them even says at the beginning of it, like, we're not about to go on some John Wick type of a killing spree, are we? And the other one's like, no, of course not. And then they proceed to like go on a John Wick type of a killing spree, where like, they're just like, it's like, I don't want to call it formulaic, but it's almost just like every scene is, they go to a place where they need a piece of information. They get that piece of information, but they end up getting in a fight with the bad guys, and then they murder one or two of the bad guys, and one of them gets a little bit hurt. And so that's like makes the next scene even more challenging, but it just kind of keeps going like that. But I'm not putting it down in any way. It's very fun. And it's also very interesting because of the fact that their sons are gay and like they didn't really accept them, like interspersed in these scenes of just like ultra chaotic violence, there's these like very down to earth conversations about why these fathers couldn't accept their sons, and like how, and like rant, there's a transgender character in there that one of them like spends a lot of time with, and they're basically just like, they learn in real time like, oh, this is who you are, this is how you represent yourself, this is how you see yourself. And it's just, so it's like, it's very interesting because it's this, it's like, it feels somewhat like one of those very fun, easy to get through like Harlan Coben like mysteries. And then sandwich on top of that is like social commentary about inclusion and representation. It's really awesome. But again, it is like, it's just after Lenny Mark, I've read like six straight, like absolutely soul crushing, beautiful books. And I was like, I need a book that's just going to be like, it's not, calling it like a romp is weird because it's like, there's a bunch of murders that happen.
Violent romp.
Yeah, like, there's a wood chipper involved in one of the scenes. It's like watching Fargo where you're like, I shouldn't be enjoying this, but I am. So yeah, if you like those types of like thriller types of fiction, it's really good. It's I'm very much enjoyed it.
That's cool. I saved his Blacktop Wasteland. That also by Cosby, I think. I saved that one too because like I kind of need stuff like that. And I don't mind the violence, but I need like some extra content in there, you know, like that kind of goes beyond that. So that sounds up my alley for that type of book.
It's delightful. And I don't know about you guys, but like I love horror but I think I can read basic the scariest possible horror books because my brain just like if it's too scary, my brain just won't let me visualize the scary thing. Same thing with like graphic violence in a book. Like in a movie, I'm like, oh, that's horrible. How can you show it to me? But like they can describe it in a book. I'm like, yeah, they threw his body in a wood chipper and now he's
fine. Yeah, you're just like you're like, I have a vague idea of what that would look like, but I don't need to go into detail. Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah, they're taking out his stomach. Oh, all right, whatever.
Oh, no problem. Stomach out.
Oh, it is even
casual.
Yeah, who needs a stomach these days?
Oh man. Let's do another one more time around. Maria, what's your next one?
All right. I'm going to talk about a book that I am excited about coming out that this series was originally recommended to me by Kristen. But the new Evie Dunmore historical romance is coming out and it's called Portrait of a Scotsman and it's out for 2021. This series, and I'm bringing it up because I know like romances are very popular and I probably don't need to recommend it to you, but I'm recommending this to you, oh listener, as if you do not like historical romances or you haven't tried historical romances, I would recommend this series. And this is the third book that's coming out. It was one of the first historical romances I ever read because I had tried a couple others and I hadn't enjoyed them. And I think I just hadn't found the right author. So I haven't looked back after this one. And if I find a historical romance at this point that I don't like, then I just don't finish it. And I usually finish a lot of books, but I think Evie Dunmore does a really good job of bringing in a lot of the historical aspects of the time period she's chosen to kind of center her books around. And that's like the women's suffrage movement in England. And I think especially the second book, which I think is called A Rogue of One's Own, it is like really full of historical goodies and like just some of the things that women had to go through just to try and be, you know, politically active while still being able to like be an eligible person to get married and things like that. So I feel like her heroines are like extra badass and the deep dives are really great, but then there's also what you would come to expect from, you know, historical romance are still like a brooding hero or like a rake or that sort of thing. So this is going toe to toe with a brooding Scotsman. And is rather bold for a respectable suffrage, but when he happens suffragist, but when he happens to be her unexpected husband, because of course they were put in a situation where that had to happen, what else is she gonna do, you know? So I just think if you haven't tried historical romance in a while, I recommend this series. And I have an arc of this and I am very excited to dive into it after I finish the Shelley Parker Chan.
It's really fun.
I love like a historical book where you're just like, I need to dive into this time period. I want to figure these things out on your own. Like it makes you want to like get more into that. And I feel like she does a good job of that.
Yeah, plus
her characters are a delight.
Yeah.
Kristen, what is your next one?
Okay. So I'm going to talk about My Heart is a Chainsaw by Stephen Graham Jones. And again, I'm sorry, everyone. This comes out on August 31st. Also, like, how awesome is that title? I love it so much.
I would read anything Stephen Graham Jones writes. And this immediately, I was like, as soon as you said Stephen Graham Jones, I was like, of course, that's a Stephen Graham Jones book. That just sounds. Sorry, continue.
No, you're fine. Last year he came out with The Only Good Indians. And so this year we are on with My Heart is a Chainsaw. And this is about our main character, Jade, who is a 17-year-old girl who is just ending her high school career. And she comes from a home with an abusive father and a mother who is absent. And she lives in this town that is starting to change because it's being gentrified by these like millionaires, billionaires who are building these giant mansions across the lake. And she basically has created this shell of armor around herself in the form of horror. And she watches slashers, and that's like her world. So she has an encyclopedic novel of basically any slasher movie out there. And she starts noticing that, like, oh my gosh, she like literally finds a dead body in the lake. And what I loved about this novel is she does everything I would never do. And I feel like as a reader, I was getting so nervous on her behalf because it's like, she's hiding evidence. She's like trying to manipulate these situations to turn her actual life into a slasher film. And so she just keeps thinking about everything in terms of like, well, what would happen in a slasher movie? And you're in her mind kind of with her. So the whole time I'm just like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And then I'm like, no, like it's not a slasher movie, Jade. This is your reality. So it was just, she is a fantastic character who again builds up in armor to make herself kind of unlikable to the outside world. And that is looked at a little bit. And it's just like, this was a character that I really, really enjoyed reading about. And it was a situation that was just kind of ridiculous because I think slashers generally are really ridiculous, but it's so much fun. And just, I think Stephen Graham Jones does a great job of bringing in a lot of like literary elements and making his books so much more than just like your campy fun horror. So I loved this book. I thought it was really excellent. And yeah, if you're looking for something that is a little bit deeper than just what most people think horror is, I'd say read anything Stephen Graham Jones. He's excellent.
That I just said before how super scary books, I can like not picture them and they don't scare me. That's not true. The Only Good Indian scared the absolute shit out of me. It was so scary. It's so good. I love everything he does. But yeah, I'm so excited about this. That one.
Yes. They're definitely like certain, like he's really good at building location. And I think with a lot of horror, you just get these scenes stuck in your head. And so now I'm thinking about it and I'm like, yeah, there are definitely some scenes from My Heart is a Chainsaw that I'm like, yep, that one stands out.
Oh man, I can't wait for this. That sounds so good. Emma, would you like to talk about the book you didn't like?
No, I'm actually just going to talk about something that I'm excited about because I think I talked about a book I hated on the last podcast episode I was on. So we won't go there again.
Okay.
So yeah, we're going to round out my truly random grab bag of picks with a thriller that I'm really excited about. Old school podcast listeners will remember that I was previously only on the thriller train and have recently been on romance and fantasy. So we are kind of circling back to past interests here. But Karen Slaughter has a new book. She doesn't really need like, you know, promotion or advertising. But I love her books. She has a book out, I believe, next week, called False Witness. And she does such a good job, in my opinion, of creating thriller stories where the character has seemingly the most boring life ever. But newsflash, they actually have like a crazy hidden past or like someone out to get them or all these other crazy things. And I just love her books that there's always like a catalyst moment where something happens and it's like, oh crap, this person's life is not at all what you think it is. So that's the case with the character in this book. Lee is just like a defense attorney. She has a daughter. Even her divorce that she's going through is like as chill as I guess divorces can be. And her life is super unremarkable. But of course, behind all of her really boring adult life, she has a childhood full of all of our favorite things in mystery thrillers, betrayal, secrets, you know, violence, which Karen Slaughter's books are pretty grim. So like as a warning, they get pretty, I would say gross. They get pretty gross. There's often a lot of violence. So if that is not at all your cup of tea, I would not recommend her books because they can get very, very dark very quickly. But I guess in this book, Lee is sort of confronted with her past when she gets a case for a wealthy man who is accused of rape. And it turns out that she knows him, he knows her, and sort of his interaction with her threatens to bring up all of the things she's been running from for many, many years. And so I just really love Karen Slaughter's books in that she always, I don't know how writers do this, but she always plots things out. I think where everything comes together at the end and all the pieces make so much sense, but as you're reading it, you're like, oh, how did I not notice this? How, like, everything is so perfectly done. And so I'm really excited to get my hands on this book when it comes out next week. It's been a while since she's come out with a standalone thriller. I think her most recent one was from her Will Trent series. So I'm excited to be back in standalone land.
Do you feel like she's a good like second reading author? Because like, again, you had all these pieces during her novel and then they come together. So reading it again is kind of like, oh, I see where that fits now.
I think so. I think for certain books, most definitely, you would pick up so much more the second time around. Hmm.
She's also this coming Monday's episode of our podcast.
Nice, guys. We're like really on it with this.
Yeah, we are hitting it.
So trending. And she's so good. I'm so excited to listen to the podcast, though. She's hilarious, which is almost at odds with the really dark and heavy topics of all of her books.
That's basically every author. That's exactly every author. Every author who like writes that stuff, who like writes extremely dark books, they're
hilarious
and psychologically stable and funny because they get it all out on the page. Yeah, that's
yeah, that's fair. I feel like I'm the only one that didn't talk about like blood and guts. I need to.
Well, it's okay. I have one that's not blood and guts. And because Kristen was apologizing for a book that comes out in August. This one doesn't come out until October, but I don't care because I just finished it last night and I'm interviewing the author next week. And so it's called The Night the Lights Went Out by Drew McGarry. Drew McGarry is fairly well known as an author. He wrote The Hike and Postmortal, but he's much more known for the website that he used to write on called Deadspin, and now the website that he writes on called Defector.
My fiance loves him.
Yes. Okay. So he is, like, without exaggeration, my favorite person on the internet. He has this ability. He is a middle-aged white male. He has a family. He's like a very suburban dad. And so he doesn't hide from that. He writes, he's like happily a dork. He went on Chopped and he won like the celebrity Chopped like a million years ago. But then he'll write these like jokey dad things. He's very like the thing that you may recognize him from if you are not even a fan of Drew McGarry or anything is every year he does this thing around Christmas called The Hater's Guide to the Williams and Sonoma like gift. So Drew McGarry, so he'll do these like really funny pieces, but then he'll write, he's without exaggeration one of the best profilers on the entire internet. Like he'll write profiles for GQ. He did one on Anthony Bourdain that's like universally recognized as like the best thing that's ever been written about Anthony Bourdain. He's just an incredible human being. And so he wrote these books. If you've never read The Hike, highly recommend it. It's so good. But The Night the Lights Went Out is nonfiction because a couple years ago he was hosting the Deadspin Awards in New York City. And afterwards they went to a karaoke bar and he had one beer. So he wasn't drunk. He wasn't on anything. And he basically passed out in a hallway and hit his head so hard on multiple places in his head that he had brain hemorrhaging. The staff and like coworkers that he worked with Deadspin and now work with him on Defector basically saw what happened, were able to get him to a hospital and like beg the people at the hospital to like look, take a deeper look into his brain. And saved his life. He ended up having to have brain surgery that night. They had to put him in a 2-week coma. And so this book is basically the like, what happened that night. He interviewed all of his coworkers because he's like, obviously I just woke up and I assumed it was the next day and I didn't know what had happened to me. They told me I had been asleep for 2 weeks. And so he interviews all of like the first part of it he interviews all of his coworkers, and they explain what they went through to get him to the hospital and to keep him alive. And then it's all about his process of, like, once he was somehow able to get out of the hospital, like, he basically should not have lived, but he was able to get out of the hospital. And it's through his whole process of, like, learning how to smell again, getting cochlear implants, learning how to taste, and, like, all these different things, and, like, all the emotional trauma that he went through, and all the stuff that his family had to go through because of the, like, mental anguish that he was not realizing he was putting them in, and then going to therapy for it, and all this stuff. He is as healthy as someone could be now, that has, like, he lives a completely normal life. He writes, he, like I said, he wrote this book. He writes for defector.com, which is my favorite website on the entire internet. He hosts a podcast. He's like, literally, I, like, when I found out that he was going to end up going to be being okay, and then I found out that he wrote this book, like, there's never been a book that I pushed harder to get the person on the podcast. And they even asked me, like, he doesn't love talking for a super long time about this. And I was like, can I have an hour anyway? And, like, they're like, sure, I guess, maybe. So it doesn't come out till October, but, like, it's just, I don't know. He's just this guy who has the ability to, like, write 4,000 words about football, but then he'll also write 4,000 words about, like, what the best side dish is for Thanksgiving. And both of them are equally good and wonderful things. So, yeah, it's called The Night the Lights Went Out, and he'll be on the podcast in October. But if you can, like, if you go pre-order it or place a hold on it now.
Wow.
It's so good. So, so good. So, if you guys have, like, one really, really quick one, we can go, but Adam has a meeting at 3.
I have a super quick one I can do that I'm just excited about. Yeah. If you haven't heard Cadwell Turnbull speak on any author panel, he is thebomb.com, and his new fantasy novel comes out in September, No Gods, No Monsters. And it's kind of about, like, fantasy creatures, like, coming into the real world and kind of the social repercussions on that and how people deal with it. And I'm just really excited about it. I have an arc. I just, once again, I'm obviously behind on my arc. So I'm going to get there, but I'm really excited about it.
Since we've hit a trifecta, he was on episode 347 of the podcast. I interviewed him for The Lesson, which was so good.
Oh,
so,
yes. Yeah. Awesome.
Now all three of you have unknowingly mentioned a podcast guest. So good job. I know.
We did it.
Oh, man.
I read it's like a middle grade or later elementary graphic novel called Garlic and the Vampire by Bree Paulson. And it is adorable. It's so cute. It doesn't come out until, hold on, when is it? September 28th. So I'm sorry, I keep mentioning books that aren't coming out for a bit. But this is about, like, a little humanoid garlic. Oh my gosh, Adam, your
face. I'm looking at the cover right now. Shut up. It's so cute.
It's so cute. It's so cute.
Just did the same thing. Ah!
I just love it. So yeah, it's about this adorable little humanoid garlic who lives on a farm with a bunch of other humanoid vegetables. And they have a new neighbor who moves in who happens to be a vampire, or they think might be a vampire. And they decide garlic should go check it out because vampires are afraid of garlic. And it's just this really adorable book about, like, not judging people by, you know, stereotypes and things that you've heard about them. And it's the drawings are so cute. I'd highly recommend this. This is, like, a great fall read / just, like, a really sweet middle grade graphic novel. So please read it. It's adorable.
It's so cute. I want to
die. If you could see Adam and my faces right now, we're both like, so I need to read this, like,
crying from cuteness.
So yeah.
Stinking cute. Oh my gosh. Oh, well, that's perfect. Oh, you ladies are the best. Oh, well, thank you all, as always, for coming on. You're my favorite, and we always make an hour go, like, so freaking fast. I very much appreciate it.
Thank you. Nice to chat with everyone.
My heart is so full from that last, like, garlic and the vampire. Like, I don't even know how to, like, end my own podcast anymore. It's so cute. Oh, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Professional Book Nerds podcast.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from overdrive.com, and our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Adam Sokol and Jill Grunewald, and presented by Overdrive. For more information, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.